Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with three Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Milik! La Juventus è in vantaggio! All'angolino! Arek Milik! Al 90esimo! Tondo, tondo! Trova una parabola perfetta! Perfetta!
Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight Season 2, Episode 19. We're your hosts, Jake
and Matt.
Back after an action-packed return. What a Wednesday it was, bro.
It was a beautiful Wednesday. Obviously, you had the privilege of watching more games than I did.
Yes.
I was slaving away at the workplace.
Yes, sir.
I was sick, to be honest.
So. But it couldn't have come at a better time, to be honest with you, because I watched 5 games out of 10, which isn't bad. And while one game would be ending, the next would be starting. It was like I was in heaven, man.
Yeah. And in fact, I got home at around 6 o'clock and I watched 2 matches and 1 entire half.
Yeah.
And I finished work at 5:30. I think I was still going to watch 2.5 matches. It's quite a beautiful thing.
Yeah, not bad.
So as you guys heard from the intro, our goal of the week was Milik's very late free kick against Cremonese to give them the 1-0 victory. Now, a beautiful goal, great hit by Arkadiusz Milik, obviously, but has to be said, the wall was set up in a certain manner that made it a bit easier for him, and maybe Karnisecki, knowing that at least there was a lot of space in the wall, should have made ground earlier and pushed the ball past the bar. But unfortunately, that's not what he did, and Juventus got away with a victory, fortunately for Juve, obviously.
Nevertheless, Arkadiusz Milik remains the man with the highest conversion rate in Serie A when it comes to free kicks, with 33%. He has scored 4 out of 12 free kicks, dude, in Serie A.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Well, good. We know he can hit them. We remember from his Napoli days in Serie A, and even at Marseille, we've seen him in the Champions League as well, hit a couple. He's very talented from that area, and it's good that Juve have someone in those moments to step up and take a free kick like that. And he's become a regular starter, but I don't think the plan was to bring him in as a regular starter originally.
No, yeah, I think he was meant to be like Vlahovic's backup, you know?
Exactly.
But he has done very well. And to be honest, it's always nice to see a proper 9 step up and blasting a free kick home.
Yeah.
That's what you want to see.
Beautiful, man. So in this day where you were, you know, laying on the sofa, watching football. Of course, you were looking after our bets. Obviously,
yes,
with communication between us, it wasn't just Jake's decision.
I called him and he was like, bro, to be honest, man, I see I'm kind of in the middle of something. I was like, shit, what is there, man? I'm like, bro, this Spezia Atalanta. He's like, my God, my bum brother calling that fucking word.
What better are we going to put? Everyone, like, I have to explain to everyone, this man, this is work as well. Like, he's asking for bets because we have a podcast. Like,
exactly.
We're on a podcast, we're not broke.
We're totally not just talking for fun. That's what this podcast is, a front. You know, we're actually just having fun and this is just in the background. You know, we can use this as an excuse that we're working.
Exactly.
It's perfect.
Exactly. And it gave us the
babe,
perfect.
You're going to watch another one? It's work, babe.
It's work, man.
Prepare, you know?
What? We're just going to sit on a podcast and not talk, like, you know?
I think, babe, you're stealing my youth. It's been 7 hours.
It's a lot sometimes.
It's a lot.
The bets. So we started off terribly. Well, Milan Salernitana, we said that Milan would win and we got that one, all right. But at the same time, there was another bet that we lost.
Yes, we said that
Sassuolo
would win or draw against Sampdoria. Sampdoria, by the way, are the team against whom Sassuolo have kept the most clean sheets.
Oh my God, okay.
8 in 18 matches. And Sampdoria lost their last 4 games before this without scoring a single goal. So I thought that would be a pretty safe bet. No Sassuolo fucking draw or win, but apparently not.
Apparently not. So we lost the first round, so that was 10 euro scratched off from Serie A Spotlight's bank account. After that, we also said that Atalanta would get past Spezia. They would outright beat Spezia, and they were held 2-2.
Against a team that they had beaten three times in a row, scoring three goals in each match, by the way. And Spezia, who were, by the way, at one point 3-0 up before the VAR call against Atalanta, hadn't beaten Atalanta since 1931, by the way. So I'm like, okay, this is a pretty safe bet again. Boom, fucked.
Post-World War One was, was the last. That's mad. We then said that after giving Lazio all the praise in the world for how they are defensively, how lethal they are going forward with Sergei and Chira and Zaccagni and Felipe Anderson as well, they lost to Lecce 2-1.
That was always going to be a risky bet.
That was risky. Yeah, and it was, but the odds were good. They were at like 2 points something.
Yeah, it was worth it
for that. Yeah. But you think if you're competing top four, and I know obviously Milan were held to Cremonese, so on and so forth. But Lazio are going to want to be at least getting something out of a match like that. Like, sure, it's a tough away game against a tough side, but you should be really getting all 3 points over there, at least a fucking point. So yeah, I was quite disappointed that that one didn't go over the line for us.
But then,
Juve in the last minute beat Cremonese, and Jake and I had a Juve victory with under five goals.
Under 5 goals, that's what we call a pussy bet. It's like the odds are just two, we take it. Like.
Literally. Terrible gambling, but we got our money back, so we made 20 euros, so we broke even, and then we're like, wait, so clearly...
We're cursed.
Every bet that we're placing, except for the Juve ones, is happening the other way around, we're just losing everything, like, Spezia held Atalanta, Lecce beat Lazio, we're like, fuck it, so let's say Napoli are going to win the next game, so that Inter beat them, and bam, that's when worked in our favor.
More competitive league, thanks to us.
Exactly, so we lost money.
Yes.
Quite a significant amount, actually, for our betting standards. Exactly, yes, for our betting standards, it's a lot of money. But yeah, we'll be back. We'll bounce back, guys. Look, if we stop, like, we're pussios.
Yeah,
so
no, we're going to keep going. It's a meme at this point. Why not? Why not keep entertaining it?
Exactly. Remember, guys, before we get into everything, follow us on Spotify, follow us on Apple Podcasts, and rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening. We're on social media, as you know. We're on Instagram, so give us a follow over there at Serie A Spotlight. We're on Twitter as well. We're on TikTok, which is probably our biggest platform, so... have a look, engage with us, tell us what you think, and this could be a beautiful, beautiful relationship between podcaster and listener.
Now, bro, you're very good at, like, thinking on the spot, you know, like...
you think?
Yeah, really, really good at adapting, improvising, like... So how about you take those listeners right now who are in a bit of a rush and need to know what happened this match day through a bit of a journey?
All right. So, I mean, they started at 12:30. The games, and there were two fixtures, Salernitana against Milan, Sassuolo against Sampdoria. So the champions managed to beat Salernitana 2-1 away from home, while Sassuolo shockingly lost to Sampdoria, who are dead last, 2-1. They made a couple of signings, Sampdoria, and to be honest, they looked much brighter than they previously had. Spezia held Salernitana 2-2 with Spezia at home and looking much the better side for a lot of the game. Torino 1, Verona 1, another team in the bottom three that's, you know, really pushing at the moment. Lecce 2, Lazio 1, massive step up for Lecce, massive step down for Lazio. Roma 1, Bologna 0, do it in classic Mourinho fashion. They score a penalty and then they defend all the game. Cremonese 0, Juve 1. A late Arkadiusz Milik free kick gave the Bianconeri a victory. Fiorentina 1, Monza 1, as I predicted in the last episode. Inter 1, Napoli 0, thanks to our bet. Milan now only 5 points under Napoli, so 2 games rather than 3 games to turn it around. And Udinese again being held by Empoli at home. Obviously, I think out of this match day, the highlight was the statement Inter made by handing Napoli their first defeat of the season. Inter were previously struggling, losing 5 matches out of their opening 15 in the first half of the season. But here, they really managed to turn things around. They had a fantastic performance. They beat Napoli, who have been insane this season. So I think that's definitely the main standout.
Yes, sir. I agree with you totally.
I think before we get into all the matches, you have a few stats you'd like to go through of the match day.
Yes, sir. We will start off with 8. These were the total number of shots taken by Sassuolo forward Domenico Berardi, who was first in match day 16's classification, followed by Fiorentina number 9 Arthur Cabral, who got 5. Cabral, together with Milan's Giroud, is first in terms of number of shots at goal, 3 for both. Guillermo Ochoa decided that he wanted to stop hibernating every 4 years and actually produce performances on the great stage on a weekly basis. He was the goalkeeper who made the most saves in the last round on his debut, actually. 9 saves for the Mexican, followed by Marco Carnesecchi of Cremonese with 7 and Michele Di Gregorio of Monza with 5. Napoli and Sassuolo were the teams that completed the most dribbles with 9, with the record holder being Armand Lloriente with 6, followed by Rafael Leao of Milan with 4.
Very interesting, as always, brother. Your stats are my favorite stats in the world.
Thanks, bro.
No worries. Shall we get into each game? We can start off, obviously, with Inter 1, Napoli 0. So Inter lined up in their classic 3-5-2 formation. Onana in goal with a backline of Bastoni, Acerbi and Skriniar. Di Marco on the left and Darmian on the right as wingbacks. Çalhanoğlu obviously had to replace Brozovic in the regista role due to his injury. Mkhitaryan and Barella just ahead of him with Dzeko and Lukaku up front. For Napoli, it was their classic 4-3-3 also. Beautiful kind of dynamic over here, a classic 3-5-2 against a classic 4-3-3. Yeah. Meret in goal with a backline of Di Lorenzo, Rahmani, Minje and Oliveira. Anguissa, Lobotka, Zielinski in the midfield with Politano, Osimhen and Guevara up front. So no real losses there for Napoli, none at all actually.
Yeah, man. And after 13 wins and 2 draws this season, this is the setup that gave them their first loss.
Yeah.
Their first loss, by the way, since April 2022 against Empoli.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it came to Dzeko, man, by the way, who has scored 20 goals for Inter in Serie A, each of them after turning 35 years old, bro.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
He's honestly so underrated. I think for me, it's him and Giroud, when it comes to that generation of players, are the most underrated.
Oh, incredibly.
Of strikers, especially.
Incredibly. And I think Dzeko, when he made the switch to Inter, I think everyone thought he was past it at that point. He wasn't getting, you know, he was being benched by Borja Mayoral sometimes for a young, energetic guy. And everyone's like, okay, maybe he's falling off it. Inter will take him now because they're broke. They got him and what a coup he was, man. The second Lukaku or Lautaro was unavailable, the man is there at 35 years old. Like you said, very comparable to Giroud, man.
Yeah. In his last 3 games for Inter, of course, he has a goal and an assist against Bologna, 2 goals against Atalanta and a goal against Napoli. This season, at 36 years old, he's on 10 goals and 4 assists.
My God.
Yeah, this is a guy who scored everywhere he's been. You know, I mean, you look at his stats at Wolfsburg, 66 goals, City, 50 goals. Roma, he's got over 80 goals, like Inter, 20 goals. You know, for Bosnia, 64 goals. Like,
no, he's crazy. Inevitable. He's inevitable, Dzeko. Watched him score live in that Sassuolo game.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course.
And I saw him score for Rome as well. I think he's one of the players that I watched the most live. But yeah, it was a ball in from Di Marco in the 56th minute. Dzeko got there, headed. He was alone basically, but it was a great run off the ball and to get into that position. He very much attacked the header and he beat Meret. Meret had a super game, but I think Inter overall did exactly what they had to do and more to win this game, man. I think they were defending brilliantly, obviously. They were really keeping their shape and they constantly had 11 men behind the ball and everyone, no one put a foot wrong in that process. Yeah. However, it was more their approach. When they were defending in that manner, they were really picking and choosing their battles. They knew when they should counter, they knew when they should stay disciplined and stay behind. Their decision-making was perfect and because of their low block and their low defensive line, it made it difficult for Guevara to do his thing, for Osimhen to get in behind. Osimhen was getting bullied by that back three, bro.
Yeah. Inter, bro, the second they were out of possession, you're absolutely right, they sat back. They told Napoli, you go, take the ball, come to us.
Like, no 50-50s.
No 50-50s, nothing. They just sat deep. And the thing is, Kvaratskhelia attempted a few moves on the left. He tend to cut inside every time and just hit a wall.
Exactly.
Every time.
Exactly.
Politano couldn't get into
Politano
the game.
He was invisible. He never got started.
And Osimhen was isolated. In fact, you look at the moves of Napoli, like you see Anguissa, Lobotka and Zielinski in the middle, those were the guys who had the ball the most. And of course, the fullbacks, they're just trying to penetrate this fucking Inter team, like passing the ball around, and they couldn't. They kept losing the ball and Inter kept countering. It was a really smart setup by Inzaghi.
Definitely, man. And a very attacking outlet in Di Marco on the left-hand side for Inter, who sometimes in the final third, his output was a little bit questionable, and even the commentator was having a bit of a go at him in the beginning of the second half. But, you know, he's in the right position, whips the ball in, Zeko's there, he puts the ball into the back of the net, another assist for Di Marco, and he had the ball so much going forward.
Yeah, man, I'm a massive fan of Di Marco, and, you know, watching him do this at Verona was one thing, but seeing him doing it at Inter in these big games, in these big moments in the Champions League, it's...
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
It's a good thing, man. His development is great. He's only 25 years old.
My God,
25 years old. He's on the right path. You know, he's a starter at Inter, and he's displacing Gosens, you know, who in theory is a good player. What did you make, bro, of this Lukaku comedy show?
Lukaku was funny, yeah, man. He's funny at the moment, in my opinion. And this guy, the beauty of Lukaku is he can prove me wrong very soon.
Yeah.
He can prove me wrong very soon. But right now, to me, it doesn't look like Lukaku belongs on a football pitch. It doesn't. He doesn't seem up to it. Now, he had a few opportunities. He tested Meret on a couple of occasions. He was a bit more lively than usual. But you give him... And he was putting the ball in the right positions, to be fair to him. His link-up play was good.
Yeah, the great ball to Di Marco in the first half.
That's when Darmian missed that opportunity. That was brilliant play by Lukaku.
Di Marco missed the first one and then Darmian missed another one after.
Exactly, that layoff by Barella. Exactly. That was beautiful. Oh, long ball by Lukaku, layoff by Barella. It's supposed to be the other way around, but whatever.
I mean, it's true. He's better at playing the ball right now than he is at number one controlling it, because it's hilarious how an aerial ball is played to this guy and he starts flailing his arms as the ball hits him and like bounces away from his body.
He doesn't control the ball, it hits him.
It just hits him. He's so... not coordinated right now. And his shooting, bro, by the way, has been off. You know, and we saw it this game too. It's carried on from the Belgium national team, from the World Cup.
Of course. He was put on the biggest stage in the world and the poor guy was coming back from injury, probably a bit out of shape. Mm. And the world saw him have a terrible performance. And that must have knocked his confidence down a little bit. And we can see what Lukaku's like when his confidence is low. I think it's obvious that his confidence is low at the moment. He does look fired up. He does look hungry. He seems like he can't do what he used to do for some reason. But it's a mental block, man, because this was 2 years ago. You know what I mean? He's still a decently young guy. He can turn it around and he can do good. But at the moment, man, he really doesn't look up to the task.
Yeah, Lukaku, don't let those intrusive thoughts win.
There you go. Well done, Jake.
Thank you. But yes, Napoli never really looked to threaten. I can't remember a massive chance. I remember one particularly good save by Onana when he was tested.
Exactly.
It was a reflex save, a massive one, after there was some fumbling in the box.
It was one of those with a very strong arm.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Like, he dove, but his arm stayed where it was. Like, it was a great save.
But nonetheless, yes, super impressive by Inter. Disappointing return for Napoli, but this has resulted in a more competitive league, as two match days can change everything around.
Oh, definitely. And now Napoli needs to play Sampdoria away from home, which should be a good way to get back to winning ways for them. But then straight after that, on the 13th of January, they play Juve in Naples. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Napoli remain in first place, however, 5 points now ahead of Milan, so still a very good position to be for them. Inter, now enter the top four. They're on 33 points. They're 3 points clear of Lazio now, and they're only 1 point behind Juve and 3 points behind Milan, exactly.
Nice. The next game that we're going to be covering is Salernitana 1, Milan 2. Salernitana lined up with their usual 3-5-2 formation with Ochoa in goal on his debut. Fazio, Radovanovic and Lovato at the back with Brodaric and Sambia on the wings, Vilhena, Bohinen and Koulibaly in the middle with Piontek and Dia up front. This is practically a full team without Mazzocchi, who's injured, of course. Mm-hmm. Tatarusanu was in goal for Milan as Mike Maignan continues to cause many questions. Like, what's going on?
I took him on Fanta. I decided to get injured.
Like, this is broken bone type.
Yeah.
Like, literally. Like, length.
He might as well. Now, I'm glad he didn't, but he might as well have broken a bone.
Yeah, that's true, honestly. He's been out for so long. But yeah, apparently he's rumored to be back for the Spurs game, the Champions League.
Hopefully.
But yeah, Calabria as the right back, Hernandez on the left with Tomori and Kalulu as a centre-back pairing with Bennacer and Tonali as a double pivot with Salamakers on the right, Leao on the left, Brahim Diaz as the trequartista and Olivier Giroud up front. Safe to say Milan dominated this game, of course, and they got firing quite early on. They had a few chances, Leao particularly with a one-on-one. Ochoa was incredible. He made three world-class saves in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then like six or seven as the game progressed. Like,
yeah.
Amazing saves, like top quality. But it only took to the 10th minute for Leao to get round Ochoa and score from a really tight angle thanks to a beautiful ball by Sandro Tonali. In the 15th minute, Sandro Tonali actually scored himself. So he had an amazing 5 minutes over there. Yeah. Brilliant. After Brahim Diaz layoff. And then Bonazzoli caused some worries for Milan in the 83rd minute when Lassana Koulibaly ball saw the Italian volley it home in a lovely fashion, to be honest.
Yeah. No, it was a good performance by Milan. Milan forced a lot of saves out of Ochoa. They looked very dangerous going forward. However, in the 83rd minute, there was a slight lapse in concentration for Milan towards the end of the game. And that's what Salernitana threaten. If you allow Salernitana to threaten, they're going to threaten. And towards the end of the game, that's what the story was. And it continues to prove that Milan's defense isn't perhaps what it used to be. And the attacking outlet has become more prominent than the defensive one, I believe.
Yeah, that's true. Right now, they're an attacking, high-pressing unit. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, you could clearly see that Milan became weaker when Charles de Ketelaere came on along with Gabbia. Not that they were bad, of course. Gabbia was pretty solid, to be honest. De Ketelaere, of course, was quite rusty still. He looks better at, like, getting the ball and passing it than when he actually has a shot to take, you know. Yeah. He's not going to score the chance. He's too low on confidence right now. I just think you have to, like, keep playing it simple, keep getting the simple things right, and eventually you'll pick up from there your performance. And sure, he did that well enough. But Brahim Diaz was having a really good game.
Yeah, Brahim Diaz, to be honest, this season, obviously he's gotten so much criticism over the past 3 years at Milan. I think the season in particular, but I think the season has been his best season thus far. I think he's proving, like, even when he was being played on the right-hand side when Milan were struggling with injuries, when they had literally no right wingers, he was playing there and he scored that goal against Juve as well. He scored a goal shortly after. I forgot against who. But he's been really good. Charles, I think he just needs to understand that at the moment, since he's low on confidence, less is more.
Yes.
And the less that he tries to do and the more generous that he is in the manner in which he plays, his confidence will slowly go up and nothing devastating will happen. He'll just be feeling it out and getting a hang of it. But when you see him in critical situations where he has to shoot and score, essentially, that's where you see him struggle, or like with a final decision, for example.
Yeah. Kiss. Keep it simple. Stupid.
Yeah. Beautiful.
But yes, it was this substitution, I believe, that caused a bit of a turning point. Salernitana did come out pressing, and they are capable of that. But when CDK and Gabbia came on, they pressed even more and they became very aggressive. In fact, they got like 3 cards in 6 minutes. And eventually, Koulibaly did pick out Bonazzoli, and they did cause some concerns. But then I feel like the substitutions of the introductions of Dest and Vranks, for example, were quite good for Milan. Mm-hmm. And they got over the line quite well.
Yeah, I can't highlight enough. I've said this before. How much I like so far what I've seen from Vranks. Mm-hmm. I think naturally he looks very good. And a couple seasons at Milan with training with their squad and training with their defenders, he's going to prove to be a real titan, man. And he can start pushing from then on.
Yeah, he's definitely good in that pocket.
What did you make of Milan overall in this game after the return, after the break?
So promising start, created lots of chances. If it weren't for the legendary Ochoa in goal, this could have easily been a comfortable victory for Milan. The guy kept them in it, and that goal at the end almost caused an unlikely upset. But Milan, by far, the better team.
Yeah, now obviously.
In fact, one shot on target for Salernitana was the goal.
Yeah. Bonazzoli. Classic, yes. Obviously, Bonazzoli.
Bonazzoli, by the way, has equaled Marco Di Vaio as the Salernitana top scorer in Serie A of all time.
How many goals is
12.
That? 12. Di Vaio, no.
Ronaldo should have gone to Salernitana, man. Made history. I'm sure he can get 12 goals for Salernitana, no?
No, but yeah. He thinks he's in South Africa, but he's in Saudi Arabia.
That was hilarious, by the way.
It was. No, I agree with you basically about Milan. Now, obviously, we're high and mighty, but there is a game against Roma this Sunday at 8:45. A very, very tough fixture for Milan against, you know, Mourinho's Roma. And we'll see what happens over there. I'm confident that Milan can get it done. But if there's anyone that can break down someone's play in this league, apart from Inter nowadays, it's Roma. Roma will stop you from playing your game. So that's going
to
be interesting.
Pray to God, Roma don't score in the first half.
Yeah,
because it'll be the most frustrating game of football ever.
Definitely, man. So Milan in second on 36 points, 5 points behind Napoli and 2 points ahead of Juve, while Salernitana are in 14th on 17 points, 1 behind Empoli and Lecce, same points as Monza. The next game we're going to be covering is Cremonese's 250th match in Serie A, as they almost held Juventus in a 0-0 draw, but Juventus managed to get a late victory thanks to an Arkadiusz Milik goal and won 1-0. Cremonese lined up in a 3-4-1-2 formation with Karnesecki in goal and a back line of Lashovskvili, Bianchetti and Ferrari, Valeri on the left and Ser Nicola on the right with Castagnetti and Meite in the holding midfield roles, Pekel just ahead of them with Dessers and Okereke up front. Allegri's side lined up in a 3-5-1-1 formation with Szczesny in goal and the back line of Gatti, Bremer and Danilo, Sule on the right and Kostic on the left with a midfield three of Fagioli, Locatelli and McKennie, Miretti just ahead of them shouldering Milik, who played as a punta. So pretty much, as I said, Cremonese played so well during this game, and they looked better than Juve, in my opinion. Why do you think that was?
So this Juventus was set up quite defensively. We saw the same problems that Juventus sides under Allegri, or sides under Allegri in general, tend to have going forward. Juve didn't really threaten.
No.
From the get-go. And Cremonese were extremely unfortunate not to get anything out of this game because they played really well.
Yeah.
They were amazing. Dessers hit the post at a point as well. They got awfully close.
I was quite sure Afenajan hit the post as well, man. In fact, he did.
Yeah.
Afenajan hit the post from a really tight angle as well.
Ah, yes, of course, on the byline. He shot from the byline.
Cremonese were looking dangerous, man. They were going forward well.
And this is quite a young Juve team. I mean, Sule, Fagioli and Gatti are very young players, and Miretti as well. You know, Locatelli has just took that next step in his footballing career as a regular at a big club as well. McKennie is under quite a lot of pressure from the fans. Kostic, granted.
Kostic is a standout for them because he was threatening as well from that left-hand side. He had some shots, man, and some crosses that were fantastic.
Super. You watch him charging up alone. Can't help but feel bad for the guy. The defense is solid, of course. The goalkeeper is solid. Milik wasn't particularly great before the goal. His hold-up play wasn't amazing. He was often losing the ball. But anyway, bro, all this said, and Juve have made it 7 wins in a row with 7 clean sheets in a row. Torino, Empoli, Lecce, Inter, Verona, Lazio, and Cremonese. They didn't concede a single goal and they beat every single opponent.
No, Juve have now shown us that even when they're not having their best day, they're still capable of getting a full 3 points. And that's the most important thing. If you're looking to break into top 4, then that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to win even when you're playing like shit. And they played like shit. Cremonese once again have looked really good against the big teams, but once again failing to get anything out of this match. It was a strong performance by them. They should leave with their chin held up. And so should Juve, because even though they had a very tough time, and this isn't exactly a sustainable way to win games, they got the 3 points, man. And now they move forward with their head held high.
Juve win ugly.
Yeah.
But they win ugly often.
That's true.
And that's why they're there. And that's why they're always there, man. And this game was about to be just summed up by Juve fans like screaming and queefing over that Sule nutmeg. There was an amazing Sule nutmeg, like clips on Twitter were everywhere on it. Like, it's like, you're about to draw to Cremonese, like, you know, relax with the nutmeg. Leao had an amazing nutmeg as well in the Milan game. Fun fact, I just realized how biased that's. Sule nutmeg, Leao. Sule looks like an amazing talent.
He does, man. No, I was gonna highlight. We had a funny moment because I was at work and you were watching Milan, and I saw that Bonazzoli scored, and I texted you, "Are we in trouble?" And you answered, "Yes,
yes, we're in trouble, bro." You know, it's always the case, man.
I'm sure Juve fans had the same thought, but here they are in third place on 34 points, whilst their opponents, Cremonese, on the other hand, in 19th place on 7 points, 1 point ahead of Verona and 2 points behind Sampdoria.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks to that wonderfully struck free kick by Arkadiusz Milik. The next game we're going to be covering is the exact replica of the Juve game. It's Roma 1, Bologna 0. Not exactly the same. There's a slight difference, being that they got the goal early on and they just shithouse for the entire game.
Exactly.
But yeah, let's go. Roma lined up with their usual 3-4-1-2 formation with Rui Patricio on goal, Ibanez, Smalling and Mancini at the back. El Shaarawy was on the left, Celik on the right, with Tahirovic, the 19-year-old Swedish player that Mourinho decided to call upon for this game, playing alongside Cristante in the midfield. Pellegrini was in the trequartista position with Zaniolo and Dybala up front, assuming for the counter, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I do see Mourinho using this structure quite often moving forward with Zaniolo and Dybala up front.
Particularly with how Tammy and Belotti have been playing.
Exactly. You
know, a target man who can't really score, hold up, play well.
Those two players on the bench is, you know, great for them, but also very disappointing for them at the same time.
I mean, going into the game where they need a goal, they have options and we know how their set pieces are.
Yeah,
you know, you bring on exactly. Tammy and Belotti off the bench, at least you have bodies in the box for your well-worked routines. Bologna lined up with their 4-2-3-1 formation with Skorupski in goal, Posch on the right and Lico Giannis on the left, with São Mauro and Lukumi as the centre-back pairing. Lukumi was very good. Ferguson and Medel were in the double pivot with Orsolini and Soriano out wide, Dominguez in the trequartista and Arnautovic up front. Bro, 61% ball possession for Bologna, but they couldn't get over the line. Roma were just too street smart. Mourinho is really building a unit over here.
He is, man. And I mean, if you could get a goal in the first 6 minutes and then play that out and win 1-0 at the end, it is impressive stuff. It's just, then there's also the having the ability to kill a game. So not only did they play Mourinho's system and they won by scoring one goal in the sixth minute, but I also think there's a point to be made that they failed to secure it, to make it safe. They were constantly on the edge while Bologna were charging forward in order to get that equalizer. And Roma would have hoped that they were a bit more dominant in this game. I doubt it's just Mourinho's system. I think they would have hoped to get a stronger foot in the game.
Two shots on target simply is not enough.
No.
Bologna had doubled that this game. Granted, they were chasing.
Like, that's not a choice, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's always more of a guarantee to push for another goal, you know, extend the lead. But of course, we know that coaches are different. They have different philosophies. Mourinho is extremely pragmatic. Oh, we have the lead. All we have to do is defend it.
Exactly.
And they defended it to perfection.
Exactly.
Yeah, a few stats here. Lorenzo Pellegrini has scored a Serie A goal at the Olimpico for the first time since March the 20th, 2022. 290 days ago.
Jesus Christ. In fact, I read an article. I like using, and you like using it as well because you sent me the article. Chiesa di Totti.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and they have fantastic, fantastic articles over there.
But this one was written by
a hater, bro.
A Nimrod, dude.
This guy just hates Lorenzo Pellegrini. He can't stand him. And to be honest, this article in particular, I couldn't read it comfortably because of the way it was written. No disrespect to the writers and all that. But I just did have a nightmare reading that, both for the opinion and for the structure of it.
Yeah, shall I read a few quotes from it?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please.
So here it goes. Pellegrini plotted to overthrow Fonseca in his second year, with Roma still third on the table. It resulted to Roma's collapse later that season. So he's blaming Roma's collapse on Pellegrini, trying to force Fonseca out. His injuries mostly come from training and preseason matches because he is avoiding real body clashes in competitive matches to prevent real injury.
Come on.
Every time he injured, he must miraculously recover.
Miraculously.
And get back to the squad in 1 or 2 weeks. Lay on the pitch for every 90 minutes in order to prevent younger and more talented players to get played, overperform, and eventually replace him. So this guy thinks his injuries and his fucking... He thinks it's all orchestrated to stop the younger players from breaking through.
This guy, this guy, he just rushes to conclusions. I feel like he's constantly having a battle in his own head. Like, that's why he's injured. Just like trying to figure shit out. Like,
Pellegrini out injured. Motherfucker! So when Dybala shines in World Cup final and scores key penalty, he injured himself again just to get an excuse for second half of the season.
My God, man. My God.
He says he's stat pads on penalties and free kicks, even though he's not that good at them. No, he's disrespecting him to oblivion. I mean, Pellegrini is obviously a good player.
And Pellegrini is one of the best players in Roma's team. He's the leader. He's the captain. Yeah. You know, he's a guy you have to get behind. He's a guy you need to encourage. And if you think your captain is being malicious, then there's a serious problem with your football club. Like, because for any captain to be doing anything on that level maliciously to hurt his teammates and to get the upper hand over them. Nah, man.
Yeah.
I think he's nuts.
This was Brian Cristante's 100th win for Roma in all competitions, more than any other teammate since he joined the club. There's a reason coaches like him.
Yeah, there's a reason coaches like him, and there's a reason we predicted that he'd be Mourinho's favorite player. Yeah. And he's up there, man, definitely.
I remember taking the helm at Milan on FM like 10 years ago, and Cristante was a Primavera player. Like,
oh my
Milan.
God.
Yeah, yeah. That was fun. But yeah, shall we move on to the next game?
Yep, let's just say that Roma are now in sixth place on 30 points, level with Lazio and 2 points ahead of Atalanta, whilst Bologna are in 11th place on 19 points, just one behind Fiorentina and one ahead of Lecce and Empoli.
The next game we're going to be covering is Lecce 2, Lazio 1. A 4-3-3 up against another 4-3-3 Falcone in goal for Lecce, with Gallo, Titi, Baschirotto and Gendre at the back. Gonzalez, Hulmand and Blin in the middle, with Banda out on the left, Strefezza on the right and Milan Loni, Colombo up front. Provedel was in goal for Lazio, with Lazzarri, Ciasale, Romagnoli and Marusic at the back. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic in midfield, apparently, even though I barely saw him. Cataldi in the middle alongside Buzic. Pedro on the right, with Zaccagni on the left and Giro Immobile up front. Immobile opened the scoring thanks to a nice ball from Ciasale, scoring in the 14th minute. Strefezza equalized in the 57th minute, and then Colombo eventually got the winner after Di Francesco squared it to him after a lovely move, making it 2-1 to Lecce. What the hell happened to Lazio here?
So I think obviously very good performance by Lecce. The fact that they kept the pressure up, even though maybe some people have said they should settle for the draw here and there, but they kept going out and they went for a victory and they got the victory. So kudos to Lecce. Lazio, it almost seems like there's a lack of creativity. Now, normally you have Zaccagni, who's being tricky on the left-hand side. You have Pedro, who's showing good balance and experience. And you have Savic feeding Immobile. But when that doesn't work, there's normally Luis Alberto as well, who just gives them this brand new outlet to attack down from. And he can assist Ciro very easily as well. It's not just Sergei that can do it. I think the fact that there's all this all these rumors and all this gossip around him, at a point even saying he was moving the opposite direction to Lecce, didn't help. We know how Sarri is. He's not going to bring him on when there's that kind of behavior as well, because his behavior is being criticized for Lazio and his respect. So I think it was that, the lack of creativity for Lazio and not having Luis Alberto as well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, bro. When you look at Bazic, Cataldi and Milinkovic-Savic, it's solely up to Sergei to make something happen over here. And he had a shocker this game. They closed him down really well. I have to say, I'm super impressed by Lecce, man. They're such a unit, especially defensively. Every player there is amazing. Like Gallo, you see him in the opposition area, dribbling and attempting a cross, and they're on the counter and Gallo clears it off the line. Like, how did he get there? You know, he's tireless over there on the left. Umtiti and Baskerot are just two beasts. Mm-hmm. And even Jandre on the other side provides three lungs. Yeah, you know?
Umtiti's back, man.
Yeah,
Umtiti's back. They're singing his name. He's intercepting the ball and charging forward with it and having a crack while everyone's singing his name. He's getting hard in challenges. Like, he had a brilliant performance, man.
Yes, Umtiti is indeed getting hard.
In challenges.
In challenges. He's getting hard in challenges.
Now that's a true story right there.
Exactly. Life gives me a challenge.
I get hard. That's it.
But yeah, you look at the solutions off the bench. They took out Pedro, who's a match winner. They brought on Philip Anderson, who's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. he had a few terrible moments where he just kept the ball for too long, didn't release. You know, like there was a point he got the ball out wide, he just kept running until he lost it. Mm. They brought on Vecino, who's not really going to do anything. Maybe he'll get on the end of a cross, but who's going to play that cross?
Yeah.
Marcos Antonio, Cancelieri is too young. Romero's literally 17 years old. Like, who's going to win you this game, dude? If it's not going your way, you don't have options on the bench, and that's a lack of investment.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a waste having a player again. Like, Luis Alberto, because of the rumors, isn't playing now. I don't blame Sarri. I don't think it's his fault. It's just super unfortunate that the club is going through something like that. And at this point, man, I would just say let him go. Mm. Let him go, because he brings so much and he's so good, but, you know, not in this current situation, not as long as Sarri is in charge and there are these rumors. So at this point, the best thing you can do is to let him go.
Yeah. They simply needed someone like Di Francesco on the bench.
Yeah,
Francesco came on for Lecce and turned the game around completely.
Yeah, a brilliant performance by him. Colombo keeps impressing me. Yeah. He's had a great run the past five games. I don't know how many goals and assists he has.
He scored a goal against Udinese, a goal against Atalanta, a goal and an assist against Sampdoria, and a goal against Lazio.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I'm so happy for him, man.
Yeah, he's doing well. He's breaking out. Immobile, speaking of scoring, because I forgot to address this, has reached the ninth place of the historical Serie A scorers.
Oh, wow.
Okay, he's overtaken Del Piero,
oof,
Gilardino and Signori. They have 188 each. Ciro Immobile is at 189, dude.
That's incredible, man. And to be honest, I'm not surprised, because he's just been inevitable for so long at Lazio, Ciro.
Yeah, I mean, he scores 20 plus goals year in, year out. You know, if you don't know what to do on fantasy football, you take Ciro Immobile.
Exactly.
Piola is the all-time Serie A goals scorer. He scored 274 goals in Serie A. So Immobile needs another lifetime
to
catch up to Piola. It goes to show how mental he was. Yeah. And that was in 537 games.
That's impressive, man. That's super impressive. And he's also just one letter away from having the same name as the best coach in the world. Just one letter, man.
Viola.
Brilliant.
Classic racial incident at the end of this game.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, we stand with Umtiti. We stand with Cisse. We stand with Jandre. Jandre, yeah.
Was it Jandre?
Probably, bro. I mean, you know, Lazio fans. It's not only Lazio fans, it's fans in Italy. Okay.
Fans in Italy. There was recently a situation with Vinicius Jr. as well in Spain. So unfortunately, guys, racism is everywhere. And the strictest of measures should be taken, as we've repeated ourselves, to keep out of the stadium.
Stadium bans. Literally. I think it's as simple as that. You know, they have the technology to identify, and the eyewitnesses to identify the abusers.
Exactly.
Just ban them from the stadium. They're no one's going to do it. If you know you're going to get banned from the stadium, you're not going to do it.
If you can charge a football and track exactly what it's doing and where it is, you can identify these people who are hurling racial abuse and the people holding inflatable fucking bananas and tossing bananas on the pitch. You should be able to identify them, you know what I mean? Fucking hell. But, yeah, guys, Lazio in fifth place on 30 points, level with Roma, and three behind Inter, whilst Lecce are in 12th on 18 points, level with Empoli, and 1 point ahead of Salernitana and Monza. The next game we're going to be covering was one of the most entertaining affairs that we had. It was Spezia 2, Atalanta 2, massive upset there. Spezia played in their 3-5-2 formation with Zoet in goal in the back line of Nicolau, Kiwior and Amian. Reca played out wide with Home on the other side. Burabia, Ampadu and Bastoni formed the midfield 3. Nzola and Giassi up front, classic. For Atalanta, it was a 3-4-1-2 with Sportiello in goal and Toloi, Palomino and Scalvini at the back. Meili on one side and Ruggeri on the other side with Martin Deron and Ederson in midfield. I put so much effort into saying Deron's name right that I fucked up.
You've got one more, huh?
Coop Miners, and then just ahead of them with Lookman and Zapata up front. In the 8th minute, Giassi opened the scoring for Spezia, making it 1-0 after an Mbala and Zola assist in a counter-attack. Just a few moments later, in the 18th minute, there was a terrible collision between Zapata and Zoet that forced Zoet out instantly and being replaced by their third-choice goalkeeper, 20-year-old Petar Zofko, coming in with all the pressure in the world facing Atalanta. And 10 minutes later, Zapata was replaced by Højlund after he couldn't cope from the injury.
Yeah, Højlund probably did better than Zapata had been doing all game. And Petar Zofko came in looking extremely young and nervous. He looked like he could be in the in-betweeners. Like that's how young this guy looks. With every time he saved the ball or touched the ball or claimed a simple pass, like, the crowd went nuts. They were really riling him up. And the defense was just playing for their keeper, their young keeper. They were protecting him, dude. It was so nice to see.
Yeah, that is amazing to see. And he was doing a good job. We'll get into the rest soon. A few moments later, Spezia made it 2-0, so Zofko could rest for a little bit. It was a long ball over the top by Burabia. Phenomenal ball to Mbala and Zola. And Spezia did this quite often. Nzola with a super clean finish. And his record just continues. He's on 8 goals this season, just one behind Victor Osimhen. Yeah. He's having a phenomenal season whilst not looking phenomenal, but we'll get into that, I guess. In the 77th minute, Rasmus Højlund improvised brilliantly with his back towards goal and managed to get a shot away. Zofko would have hoped to do better, but he did manage to sneak the ball underneath him after a Davide Zappacosta assist. And then it was then the 92nd minute where a ball wasn't collected after a cross that seemed to, you know, just make its way through to the far post, and Pasalic was there to fumble the ball over the line, and that, you know, he scored many goals against Spezia. This one was a bit luckier, but again, the man is just at the right place at the right time, which as a midfielder is excellent, man.
5 goals in 4 games against Spezia for Pasalic. It's a joint record in this competition alongside Arnautovic.
Jesus, Arnautovic obviously has to be involved in most debates when it comes to forwards. So yeah, what did you make of this game? It was very entertaining, man. Spezia came out to fucking play. And at a point, one thing I didn't address is that Spezia were 3-0 up.
They were,
but a goal didn't stand because it was offside. It was the Welsh guy, Ethan Ampadu, that scored. And Ethan Ampadu, he was looking dangerous when he came on. Man, he's a nice little coup in this team.
He really is. And it was his first ever Serie A goal, so it's a shame because he looked so happy and he looked absolutely depressed when it was ruled off. I think Atalanta committed a lot of men forward. I think they surrounded the Spezia box well in numbers, but they didn't seem to have the striker to finish it off. Zapata has been shaky. He just came back from injury. He was like, oh, 2023, new year, new me, I'm injury free. Nope. That's not the case, because he was of course subbed off early on due to the collision with Zoet. But yeah, I think that's the problem. They conceded early to Spezia, and you know how Spezia are. When they score early, they're a nightmare. You know, they'll sit back, they'll make your life hell, they'll try to kill the game. But then they actually got another one on the counter. So like, Atalanta are very naive, and I feel like since they've become this more pragmatic team when it comes to overloading, they're not as efficient as they used to be. It could be because of the personnel as well, of course. When you look at Zapata misfiring right now. Lookman didn't have a good game, but he has been okay. But like Muriel and Zapata on form, trash is this.
Of course. A couple of seasons ago, literally two seasons ago, those two were a force, to be reckoned with, man. But now, I think you make a good point. I think there's a reason that they became a more pragmatic side is perhaps because they realized they can't overload teams the same way that they used to. And they don't have that much pace anymore, which is something that they had in numbers before with their wing backs and up front with Muriel just terrorizing. They had Papu Gomez back in the day as well. And they're just simply not that side anymore. They're slightly more static. They position themselves well. They counterattack well. But in this game, again, it's not a choice to go 2-0 down. Man, if you're going to be a pragmatic side, you can't be conceding too early on against Spezia.
Naive at a point, goals.
Literally. And being 3-0 down at a point. And it seems like we're talking about them being a pragmatic side, but both Spezia's goals were on the counter, man.
Yeah, that's it, man. Naive. You have to be naive to concede on the counter. And the Atalanta we saw at the beginning of the season didn't look like they were capable of doing this.
No, not at all, man. Not at all. And this puts Atalanta in a very different position to where they were a couple of match days ago, man. But I think as much as this is a bad sign for Atalanta, it's a very good sign for Spezia. The fact that we're saying they haven't yet adapted to Gotti's system after having two very different managers and two very forward-thinking managers. Now they're playing under Luca Gotti. But like we said, these smaller teams who stayed together during the break have been working together and they have come out looking very good. And Spezia formed to be one of those sides, man.
Definitely, bro. Rasmus Højlund, bro, born in 2003, is the youngest foreign player to have scored at least two goals in Serie A this season. Granted, the striker department's a bit of an issue right now, but this guy does look promising.
Yeah, no, he does, Højlund. I think it's his work ethic and his physicality that make him that good. I don't think he has a particular eye for a goal that makes him better than most strikers, but I think he knows how to play in the system. I think he knows how to carry when the team isn't performing too well, doesn't carry the attacking side of the pitch. But yeah, he had a good performance here and he managed to force a goal in under obviously Zofko, who had just come in, and he was having a good game until I think he could have done better with that one.
Yeah, it went underneath him. You know, granted, great improvisation by Højlund. With the cheeky, what's it called? The R2 Circle X.
When you're going forward, not when you're cutting in, because that could be a Ronaldo chop.
It's like a forward like chop. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah, it's like you stop the ball and then kick it forward with your other leg.
Yeah, makes your opponent think. To be the defender, he just smashed it underneath the goalkeeper. Very, very good.
Exactly. So Atalanta, at the end, I think they'd be happy that they managed to get a point out of it, but that's really not where they want to be. They don't want to be celebrating a point, man, against Spezia.
Yeah. Before we conclude, I just want to highlight Gjozi. Congratulations, Gjozi. You scored your first goal. You were statistically the worst striker in Europe's top five leagues when it came to like XG. So fortunately, he has scored and things will be looking up for him. Yeah. Now, Palomino played a really good game since his return. He's been very good. Obviously, he stopped playing. He was good. He's back. He's good again.
Exactly.
João Moutinho debuted for Spezia, coming off the bench in the 66th minute. He looked quite decent, to be honest. He entered the pitch alongside Daniel Maldini.
Interesting. When worlds collide, that was João Moutinho and Daniel Maldini coming on for Spezia. who would have thought? Yeah. But, yeah, like I said, a very good result for Spezia. They're in 17th place now, and it just gives them some breathing space from Sampdoria. They're on 14 points, and Sampdoria are on 9, so a healthy 5-point gap over there. Still not where they want to be, but it is an improvement. And on the other hand, Atalanta have now moved down to 7th on 28 points, and they're now 2 points behind Roma and Lazio.
The next game we're going to be covering was another upset. Sassuolo 1, Sampdoria 2. Sampdoria looking the better team with their new signings over here, and the break clearly helping to their advantage, as we had discussed about the World Cup teams. The Serie A teams during the World Cup, we didn't have many players called up.
Yeah, the ones that stayed together for that 2-month break practicing.
Exactly. Sassuolo lined up with Consigli in goal, Rogerio on the left, Tolian on the right, with a centre-back pairing of Ferrari and Ruan. Their midfield three were Thordsvet, Henrique and Frattesi. Lauriente played on the left, Berardi played on the right, and Pinamonti played up front. For Sampdoria, was their 3-4-1-2 formation with Audero on goal, Berezinski, Nuitink, and Amion at the back. Nuitink coming in, of course, from Udinese. Lloris was on the right, Augello was on the left. The center mid pairing, of Rincon and Ronaldo Vieira, with Verre as the trequartista and Gabbiadini and Lammers up front. Of course, Lammers coming in for the parting Caputo. The first goal came in the 25th minute through Manolo Gabbiadini bicycle kick. He showed amazing composure over there. In the 28th minute, shortly after, Tommaso Augello took the opportunity after a Sassuolo error to smack it from a distance, doubling the scoring in a short amount of time.
Yeah, Ferrari giving the ball away very clumsily over there, a very failed clearance. And both these goals, just so you guys know, were contenders for our goal of the week. Both astonishing goals.
Two amazing goals over there. Sassuolo tried to come back in the second half. In the 64th minute, Pinamonti forced a foul and Domenico Berardi converted the penalty. But Sassuolo did not have anything left in their tank to deal with this. We're going to pass you on to our resident Sassuolo fan, Luke Mintoff, who's going to go off on a rant about Sassuolo and their sticky situation.
Evening, gents. Hope you're both doing well. Happy New Year, of course, as well. And the first episode of 2023. Actually, never mind, there was really one. So, scratch what I just said, and I'm an idiot. Anyways, this is going to be, well, I was going to say it was going to be a hot short take on Sassuolo's game, but I think it's going to be quite a rant. So I'll just start speaking, and at the point you can just clip me, and yeah, that'll be it. But to actually start speaking about something of note, well, the game wasn't good. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. However, the first 20 minutes didn't go too bad. Sassuolo dictated the game, more or less. They had the better chances. They were getting corners, albeit not the best finishing. Berardi was shooting. Felt like he was shooting at the football pitch with his friends rather than at the football game. But to his credit, he's not played too much, and I'm sure he's still rusty. So probably he was just, you know, trying his luck a little bit, which for a player like him can kind of excuse. But after the first goal was conceded from a really terrible defending, I mean, the corners, the man marking and the, actually how they gave away the corner was just classic Sassuolo defense. So, but it was a good goal from Gabbiadini. I mean, Samp played that set piece quite well. So credit where it's due, of course. And that you could instantly see that like deflated the whole team. So much so that Samp scored in, you know, 2 minutes time, albeit it was a fabulous strike by Agüero. I think that's how you pronounce his name. But Cesoldi's clearance was, I mean, it's like you take your kids to a five-a-side football game and they're playing at a birthday party, and the worst kid on the football pitch just tries to clear the ball because he's hopeless and he plays in defense. And it went right to Agüero, and he just had a fantastic shot, which just had, you know, there was no chance of saving it, really. But more on the first half, a lot of players were just below par. Fratesi, I kid you not, it felt like he was playing for Roma in that game. Defense was all over the place. Clearances were really half-assed. Rogerio, I think that's the worst performance I've seen of Rogerio in a while. He looked, I don't know, the way he was just, he gave away so many balls by under-hitting the pass to Lauriente that I at the point I was on the train and I was actually going to slam my phone against the wall. It was that frustrating to watch. Then, of course, you know, first half ended 2-0. I think that Dionisi did give a really good pep talk in halftime, because instantly you could see the team changed their mentality. They changed their focus and the way they played. Torsvet was subbed off, which I don't fully agree with. He was definitely not the worst man on the pitch in the first half. He was at least trying. Sometimes he was his control wasn't too great, so sometimes he lost the ball like that, but other players were doing, in my opinion, way worse mistakes than he was doing. Pinamonti also was absolutely useless. The thing which boils my blood the most is I've never seen him be that backs to the wall striker. I mean, maybe I never paid attention for Empoli's games that much, but he seemed way more full of sprite and you know, a bit of finesse. It's as full. He just backs to the goal, he holds up the play, then it's just a pass which is either under hit or over hit, or he just loses the ball, or he gets tackled and he starts crying. And that happened like at least 4 times in the first half. Anyway, second half, it was better. Definitely, it was better from Sassuolo. Torsved got subbed off. Traore, in my opinion, changed the game quite a bit. Traore and Laurenta on the left-hand flank was actually quite nice to see. They linked up quite well. And the half Traore there, who seemed like he was playing with more confidence, even the way he was switching the play to the other side, to Berardi, that was something that they were missing for the whole season so far. So it was good to see Traore back and Traore playing with, you know, decent confidence. And of course, I mean, although I was bashing Pinamonti, he did get a penalty for the team, which Berardi scored. There were a number of opportunities where Sassuolo could have scored a second, but holy hell, Audero made a few fabulous saves. One was against Laurienta, where he, you know, Laurienta was curling a shot from the outside of the box, or maybe kind of like on the line of the box. Great save. Traore missed a one-on-one. Well, not missed. It was saved because it was quite central. Berardi almost scored from a corner, which was really well taken. It was like a free volley, but he was overhitting his shots quite a bit in that game. So first half, I would literally give Sassuolo a 1 on 10. It was absolutely shambolic. Second half, I would say that they played much better. I would have definitely subbed off Pinamonti earlier than that, but I mean, then of course the argument is made he won a penalty, but apart from that, he was useless as usual. I'm just very confused why Dionisi didn't play Alvarez. I mean, and even when he came on in the second half, he was playing as a central attacking midfielder, and De Frel played as striker, and you know my opinion of De Frel, so. I mean, I think not to run too much more. They need a center back. Sassuolo need a center back urgently. I think it's urgent, and even a fullback. I mean, if I was a sporting director, Carnevali, I'd be very worried, to be honest with you. I don't think Sassuolo are going to get relegated. That would be, I mean, I would pierce my own ballsack if that happened. But it's not looking good. And I know from speaking with people on the Reddit group of Sassuolo that he has this tendency to basically just have the club as a business rather than as a football team. And it shows, you know, barely any fans, a stadium which isn't even in the cap, isn't even in the city where the team is generally located, and selling all your best players. And, okay, albeit he has made replacement signings, which have been good. Pinamonti, unfortunately, wasn't. But, of course, hindsight is great. And you know, back when he came in summer, he was a guy who scored 13 goals for Empoli, and he was looking quite hot. Laurenta was a fantastic signing. I think that he's a great addition for a position that Sassuolo urgently needed on the left wing, since Boga has left. But there is money in the bank, and they have to spend it. They have to spend it on a center back with an experience, and hopefully with a fullback who has some time to develop and get better. Because Tolian is okay. Tolian is bare okay. But for me, my opinion, Rogerio is he has like one good game in seven, and then he's hopeless the rest. And Kyriakopoulos, I think, is better, but isn't always played. I think he has fitness issues. And sometimes he's a very attacking player, which then leaves gaps in the back in an issue where Sassuolo evidently are bad in defending. So for you to have a very offensive left back in an area where you need help, I guess that's probably why Rogério gets the upper hand most of the time. They have to go to the transfer market, and then it can't be some risky center back. Or to be honest, I don't even know right now who I would get. But they have to search and look for someone who can fill that gap, because even Ferrari isn't looking good. He's looking worse and worse. Worse and worse each game. And it's sad because I actually rated him for a time, but now it's just not looking good. Of course, Erlich wasn't playing. I'm not a fan of Trezoldi at all. I think he's not the quality that Sassuolo needs at the back. I think it's urgent, honestly. And I think that things have to change. And Dionysio has to be a bit more risky as well. You know, you can't just play these players and hope that they would get better during the game. Frattesi did do that in the game, granted, but the first half, it was a joke from Frattesi. I was shocked because this is their best player the whole season so far, and he played like he didn't give any shits whatsoever. I really hope that next game I see someone else playing instead of Pinamonti. It can be Antiste, it can be Defrel, even though I don't particularly like him. It can be who I think is their most promising striker, Alvarez. But it would be a shame to see Pinamonti to play again, because he's not gelling with the team, and that's evident. And I'm not saying he should be sold, and I don't want to be dramatic, but he needs to know that that spot isn't his. And I'm way over the time I've decided to speak. So if you want to just clip parts out and you know, just take some parts which you find are the most interesting from my take, feel free. Looking forward to the next episode. And Forza Milan, you guys won yesterday. So congrats to that.
Thank you very much for your voice note, Mint. Amazing analysis as always. Happy to have you on board. I want to start off by addressing the fact that this is, in fact, our first episode of 2023. We're just terrible with formalities. So Happy New Year to everyone listening.
Happy New Year, you beautiful people.
Sassuolo may be off form, but Mintoff certainly is on form. He compared Berardi to like a kid playing with his friends in a playground or something. He called Augello, Augello. What do you call Augello?
Augello.
Augello, yeah. Like twice. That was quite funny as well. Fratesi's already playing for Roma. That killed me as well. Yeah, it's true. He was nowhere to be seen.
It's true. It was quite a tough outing for Fratesi.
I have to say, we agree with Sassuolo's defensive woes. They've had the same back line for a while, bar one centre back, and they've had a defensive issue for a while. So Rogério and Ferrari, to be honest, can be replaced, and the sooner the better for them.
I agree, man. I think that's clearly the place where they're struggling the most. Obviously, this is ignoring the fact that up front they lost so many important players. But I think the back line continues to be an issue that hasn't only come about this year, but has been there when they did have a fantastic front line as well.
Yeah. He makes an interesting point about Pinamonti playing with his back against goal at Sassuolo, whereas at Empoli he was more of a poacher kind of player. It's a new role at Sassuolo, right? They do value the link-up play a lot. Pinamonti wasn't much of a hold-up striker at Empoli.
No.
He wasn't really involved in the build-up play. He was just there to finish off the moves. I think he's got a lot on his plate right now.
Yeah, and I think adapting to a team like Sassuolo, whose strikers, although like Caputo was a poacher, Scamacca was also a poacher, but they're both very, very talented at laying the ball down to either Berardi or Raspadori back then, Traore. So it's probably a requirement that Pinamonti is taking that approach, and it's just taking him a lot of time to adapt to it. And it's messing with his confidence, and then that all becomes quite a cycle for him. He wants him out, though. What do you think about that?
I think Alvarez deserves some time.
I think so as well.
I think he, yeah, Pinamonti maybe should spend a game or two on the bench to recollect himself.
Yeah, because at this point, it's like no matter how badly you play, you're still going to start. And that's not a healthy thing to have with your striker.
Let's hope that Sassuolo gets relegated, bro.
Why?
So Mintov can pierce his ball sack, apparently.
Hey, you should pierce your ball sack if they get Europe. It should be a celebration if you're piercing your ball sack. Exactly.
Never pierce your ball sack in vain, Mintov.
Fantastic. That's part of the wisdom we give you every week, guys. Never pierce your ball sack in vain. But yeah, I think we can pretty
Sassuolo much... are in blank.
Yeah, exactly. We can pretty much conclude this just to highlight Sampdoria have had. You know, they looked much, much better than they did earlier. They made those two signings straight into the side. So that showed the situation that Sampdoria were in. And I feel like Nuiting brought a lot of stability in defense. And Lammers just brought some additional pace up front, something that was lacking significantly. I'll just take a point from you, if you care to make one, bro, about the signings that they made, and then we can conclude this game.
No, it all looked good over there. They got their first victory for a while. Their new signings definitely stepped up. You know, Nuiting brought some defensive stability, and Lammers brought something a bit different, something more energetic up front. I feel like Sampdoria looked pretty good this game.
Agreed, man.
They currently sit in 18th. With 9 points, while Sassuolo sit in 16th with 16 points. The next matches all ended 1-1. There was Torino-Verona, there was Fiorentina-Monza, and Udinese-Empoli. For Torino, Miranchuk scored in the 64th minute. For Verona, it was Milan Djuric who scored in the 45th minute. For Fiorentina, it was Arthur Cabral in the 19th, and Carlos Augusto equalized in the 61st. For Udinese, it was a Pereira goal in the 70th to equalize after a Tommaso Baldanzi goal in the 3rd minute. Akpa Akpro got his second red card of the season in the 79th minute. Some key stats from these games. Miranchuk is the first Torino player to score from outside the box since Josip Brekalo in 2021 against Udinese.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Torino and Hellas Verona have drawn 8 of their last 11 matches played against each other in Serie A.
Wow.
That was a bet.
That was a bet.
Francesco Caputo has returned to play in Serie A with Empoli 1,319 days after the last time. The last time he played for Empoli was against Inter in 2019.
Jesus.
The 4 matches played on Wednesday between Udinese and Empoli in Serie A all ended in a 1-1 draw. This was the first match played at 3 p.m., my God, in which Monza secured points in Serie A. In the previous 8 games of this type played in the competition, they always collected a defeat.
Oh my God.
Gaetano Castrovilli was back, and he also played his 100th match with Fiorentina in all competitions.
Respect. Respect. So these are the games that, unfortunately for us, we didn't get to watch with so much care because so many games are happening at the same time. It was just, we selected the other games to watch, maybe the bigger games, the games that we found more exciting. One that I am in particular mad about not watching is Fiorentina-Monza, especially because we had so many different predictions when we had Mintov on, so on and so forth. It would have been interesting to see, but I believe we predicted a draw, you and I. So... yeah. That's cool.
Nice. That's going to win us money. Cabral's goal, bro, was like prime Battistuta.
Man, Cabral is so hype.
He's so hype. He's a gas train, dude. He would be one of Zlatan's adrenaline brothers.
Adrenaline brothers. Such a particular group of people. Like
Galliani, Gattuso, and Zlatan are the adrenaline brothers mentioned in Zlatan's adrenaline. Yeah, but... Caputo got back to not scoring ways, to assisting ways, because he set up Baldanzi on that goal. Nice to see Empoli with a fluid striker over there. Definitely interesting. Interesting things all around. We predicted that Verona would start to pick up over here.
Yeah.
And they drew to Torino right now. Yeah, let's see if this is a sign of better things to come. Illich watch.
Exactly. Illich watch. And Torino are a tough side to play against, especially away from home, and for Verona to get 1 point from that outing. Now we've seen them get 1 point before. Now it's about finally getting some victories. So we'll see what they can do.
Yeah. Matthias, if you're listening, by the way, do send me your take on Verona if you watch the game, or Empoli as well, because I know you love that team too.
Yeah. Yeah. By either or, man. It's great having someone like him who listens and takes interest in so many different teams and has so many good takes. So thank you for listening, brother. But I think for this episode, we're pretty much done.
It's obviously a midweek recap.
Exactly. We're going to be doing these a bit more often rather than grouping two match days together. We're going to do shorter episodes recapping the midweek games in a bit of a faster pace. You might start seeing that we'll still keep on giving you the same detail, but we're aiming that the episodes aren't no longer 2 hours 20, 2 hours 30, and that they're a little bit shorter just so they're more consumable.
Particularly these midweek episodes.
Exactly.
Yeah, the ones off will still give you the extravaganza content.
Exactly. Exactly. But thank you very much for listening, guys. Don't forget Spotify, Apple Play, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening, rate us however good you think we are. Follow us on our socials and we'll see you all very soon. Bye.